And welcome back. A brand new interactive exhibition opens tomorrow at the St. Louis Science Center. It promises to be a detailed look at the past, present, and future of flight, from first attempts to become airborne to plans for an expedition to Mars. It's titled Above and Beyond and is part of a traveling exhibit presented by Boeing on its 100th anniversary. Joining me in studio to talk about the exhibition and the romance of flying are Christian Greer, the Chief Education and Programs Officer at the St. Louis Science Center, and John Tugas, former Navy pilot and an experimental test pilot with Boeing. He has more than 4,300 hours in the cockpits of more than 30 different kinds of aircraft. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
It's good to be here.
Great to be here.
I'm sure you're all excited. This exhibit opens tomorrow, and you're ready to go.
We're ready to go. It was 2 weeks sort of putting it in and installing it. It's 7,000 square feet, and it's going to be a fun exhibit for adults and families alike.
A lot of moving parts in this one, literally and figuratively. Give us kind of an overview, if you would, Christian.
Well, this exhibit is extremely immersive, and it includes a lot of technology interactives that allow people to use touchscreens and to even build a jet aircraft and test fly it in the facility. So it'll be a great opportunity for people to learn what it's like to be both an engineer and a pilot.
So, John, I guess flying a plane is just a piece of cake. You push a few buttons and off you go, huh?
Most teenagers can probably do it better than I can at this point. but the exhibit's amazing because it gives you a visual concept of why your planes fly, how they fly. And you find that, especially flying the simulator, it takes 10 seconds for people to catch on and get the idea.
Are you covering a lot of the history of flight in this? I know there's a great movie going to be opening. I believe it's tomorrow as well.
That's correct. We have an OmniMax film called Living in the Age of Airplanes, and we do have some combo programs that allow you to be able to do both, which we're hoping people do, immerse themselves and travel through the sort of history to understand about aviation and flight. But featured in the Above and Beyond exhibit is an interactive digital timeline that allows you to walk through 100 years of flight, and the exhibit takes you to where we are in the present and goes beyond.
Right. John, this is a natural for Boeing's involvement, is it not? I mean, the anniversary, of course, the centenary, of course, Boeing is synonymous with the flight in this country.
That's right. That's the main motivation, is the 100th anniversary of Boeing. And the whole idea is to promote STEM to the younger generation and to, you know, frankly, to look for my replacement, who's probably 10 or 12 years old right now. He walks in there, she walks in there, gets hands-on, and then gets a memory imprinted permanently, and then, you know, gets fired up about pursuing a career in STEM. So that's Boeing's goal with this whole exhibit.
The STEM issue, science, technology, engineering, and math, is a major consideration in our world today, particularly in this country, because so few kids seem to be moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's a major consideration and one that we feel for the St. Louis region. We want to put it on our shoulders as the Science Center and give people open access to learning about science, technology, engineering, and math, to connect it to popular culture, to integrate the arts, and give them exhibits like Above and Beyond as a place to really test out their skills, mm-hmm. to learn the process skills of science, dream a little bit about challenges that they want to solve. And what's nice about this exhibit, I think, as a feature, especially as you're mentioning, Don, about connecting kids to STEM, as we will have engineers from Boeing and pilots like John in the exhibit interacting with people. That's very rare for an exhibit to have the real thing right there helping you learn how to design a plane and fly it.
How much into the future do you look to in this exhibit?
Well, one of the features of this exhibit is something called a space elevator. And it's interesting because a Russian scientist who is probably considered the father of cosmonautics in 1895 actually imagined, being inspired by the Eiffel Tower, well, what if we built a tower all the way to space, what it would look like? And so this exhibit features a concept called a space elevator, where you would actually get on an elevator and ride essentially a tether up into space. So it's an exciting concept, a little bit more difficult to figure out how to design it and actually build it. But it's something that's featured in this exhibit that gives you an idea of what might happen in the future.
I saw something, too, in one of the flyers concerning this involving space junk. What's that all about?
Well, this is really interesting because you probably have greater than 20,000 objects out in space right now that are bigger than a softball that can be tracked. And the Air Force tracks them, and we have ways of knowing where the debris is at any given time so that we can make sure that people who are occupying the space station, the astronauts and cosmonauts that are above the Earth, circling around at 17,000 miles an hour, don't run into anything. But it's a real problem. Every time we send something up into space, there's the possibility for debris. Not all of it burns up in the atmosphere. So the exhibit has an interactive game that you can play with your friends or family members to actually collect the space junk and potentially zap it out of the sky.
John, a baseball-sized piece of junk can do a lot of damage to an aircraft or a spacecraft, can't it?
Particularly if it's going 17,000 miles per hour, yes.
That's tough. You know, tell me a little bit about your career. You've flown in 30 different types of aircraft, as I understand it, at least. You're looking like maybe more?
I've actually lost count. So it started when I was an embryo. I never knew anything that I want to do more than fly airplanes. And so I pursued, you know, how do I get to fly high-performance aircraft? Well, you join the military. How do I do that? And I kept on asking, how do I get to this goal? Joined the military, made a 20-year career out of it, became a test pilot. That's how you get to fly different aircraft. Typical Navy pilot will stick with one type. But I wanted to fly everything, helicopters, things with pontoons, gliders, you name it.
Well, over 20 years, how did the aircraft change?
Well, a lot of it's changed on the inside. The outside, we've got a pretty good firm grasp on aerodynamics and how to build things. If you want to go fast, go slow, hover, those kind of things. The inside's changed a lot. So in my career, you know, I've seen airplanes built with aluminum and metal. Now they're composite and very elaborate composite, different materials, very lightweight, very strong. But on the inside, that's the nice thing about aerospace engineering. It covers everything, mechanical, electrical, computer science. The software that runs these things, it's amazing. And like I said, I could probably get a kid in an F-18 right now as we speak. He'll probably be able to operate it more efficiently and quickly than I can because it's all software driven.
You wouldn't want to put that same kid in a car, probably.
Nor would I want to insure him in that car either.
Right. What about the size of the aircraft you have flown? I mean, is it different flying a fighter jet, let's say, than it would be a 747?
Absolutely. So, for example, you know, your first car is probably going to be a small, like maybe a Honda Civic-sized car. But imagine getting, you know, a couple hundred thousand miles on your belt, and then you get an SUV, all right, and that's going to have a different feel to it. And you keep on moving, say, a tractor trailer. That's going to have a totally different move. So a test pilot, his job is to study the capabilities of each vehicle he gets into, whether it's a fighter. And the largest airplane I've ever flown was a B-1 Lancer, a big bomber, and understand the characteristics and what makes it move, what propels it, all the drag forces, a lot of engineering math, and then be able to sit in that vehicle, manipulate the controls, and understand what the response is going to be.
Do you literally have to learn how to fly again when you move from one of the smaller planes to one of the larger ones, for instance?
Not really. You have to get to know, understand the input and the response. So a smaller fighter may have a stick, larger airplane may have a wheel, but if you want to turn left, you're going to have to apply same, you know, you have to displace whatever controller's in that airplane to the left. You're going to have to understand the inertia, the power, the amount of lift, the speed you're going to go to, the G-forces. So the concepts are the same, but the applications are different in that you have to understand how each one handles.
What kinds of things is Boeing working on these days that will advance the whole technology?
Well, we have right now the line is producing the F-18 ENF Super Hornet. We're still producing the F-15 Eagles. That's right here in St. Louis. But we've got concepts on the table, for example, the future fighter. Now, the big question, well, that could be something that, you know, maybe my 14-year-old son works on. Maybe he's going to be the test pilot in that. So we've got concepts way out beyond 2030 that are going to redefine the way we do business in the air, least in the fighter community.
What about space?
Space, we've got a lot going on in the space department, which I confess I'm not an expert. I know very little about that. Uh-huh. But we are looking at, orbiter replacements and ways to get to and from the space station and even beyond that.
Does the exhibit, Christian, take us to Mars, speaking of space?
Yes, it does. The exhibit has an exhibit element in it that features Mars and talks a little bit about Mars exploration. We have a Mars exhibit called Mission Mars at the Science Center that just opened in November of last year, and we cover a lot about robotics. But this exhibit talks a little bit more about traveling there and what types of rockets and propulsion systems are needed to actually get to Mars. And one of the features is a spacecraft that when the visitors get a chance to come and see it, they'll actually see that it looks a little bit like the Saturn V rocket that took humans to the moon, but combined with the solid rocket boosters of the space shuttle space transportation system.
Does it project as to when we're actually going to get there?
Well, I think every exhibit wants to be a little cautious about what we put on in terms of when things will happen. But in the timeline, one of the things that you'll notice is from the Wright brothers flight in the early 20th century to 1969, July 20th, landing on the moon was a very short period of time to exercise the level of innovation that we saw in aviation and space. And I think if the commitment is there by our country, especially as leaders, world leaders in aviation and space, I think we can get anywhere we want to go pretty quickly.
You know, I'm sure you're well aware, both you and John, that there are private enterprises that are talking about in 10 years or so making that trip. John,
space
let me
tourism.
Ask. That, exactly. And we've got a young lady in our immediate area who is one of the 100 from whom they'll pick the 10 or 12, whatever it's going to be. What do you think about that, John? Is that a trip you would like to make?
Well, at this point, I'm far from young. So maybe, you know, a few years ago, I'd probably jump all over that chance. But it's going to take a special kind of person.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the great things about the exhibit, Christian, was the fact that it talks about the psychology and the physiology of being in space. And it's sort of a young person's game because there's a lot involved. But I think it'd be fascinating to be one of those people that are going to try to be in the history books. And by human nature, we're explorers, right? So I would love to be leading edge, you know, if I could roll back the time on my personal body. But I'd jump all over it.
Christian, what can you tell us about that psychology on the basis of the exhibit? I mean, the trip that we're talking about is a one-way trip.
Well, that's right. I think it's an interesting thing for most people to think about. Would you take a one-way trip anywhere? You'd want to definitely make sure that the destination you're going to is something that you envision in your future and a place where you can live. So right now, Mars is inhospitable. You can't go there and breathe. It's not like in the movies. You need to make sure that you have the ability to stay there. And if for some reason you had any difficulty in the mechanical systems on your vehicle or on the landing craft or as you were parachuting down to the surface, you would have to have the ability to wait for a very long time. And I think the recent movie, The Martian, that came out this summer really profiled that idea. We can't get to you right away if you go all the way out there. So a one-way mission takes a special kind of thought process and a special kind of person to think about.
I'm still trying to figure out why that was in the comedy category in the Golden Globes, but that's for other people to decide. John, what about the psychology of someone who does what you do as being a test pilot, for instance, or a Navy pilot with the potential for combat these days? Did you see any combat during
I did. You know, not close and personal, but I saw my fair share. And you're right. It's not for everybody. It really takes a certain kind of dedication that, you know, you can find elsewhere. You can find it in fire departments, police departments. It's a special team dedication to be able to, you know, your job is to support the person next to you who's relying on you. And that's really what it's about. And, you know, that's the kind of commitment it takes.
I can certainly understand that in a combat situation, but what about in the test pilot? I mean, you're testing something that needs to be tested because it's not proven yet.
Well, the nice thing is the stress is a little lower, but you're still a team. So I will not, you know, go on and step out to the airplane unless I have a huge engineering team behind me saying it's ready to go. I will not take off. I can take it down the runway unless I have the monitors that are watching me closely with binoculars, or they're watching the traces, electronic traces of the telemetry that's being transmitted from the airplane. All its health stats are being transmitted from the airplane to a control room with a dedicated set of eyeballs who's an expert in that area saying, I'm okay. And if someone says something, you know, knock it off or terminate or stop, I'm going to stop. And so it's still the same team concept. The test pilot is just the guy at the controls, but there's a whole team around it.
What are you actually testing when you're test piloting? Obviously, the plane can fly, but what else are you testing?
Well, it kind of depends. For here at St. Louis, we'll take the airplane that was just born and get it in the air for the very first time. And there's a lot that happens before we even start the engines. Like, they'll do ground checks on every system, everything from air conditioning, lights, tires, to the engine system. And then eventually we'll get out to the airplane, start it up, check everything before we leave the chucks, and take it flying. When we take it flying, we go out to the very top speed it's advertised at. We'll go to the bottom speed, and so on, and check everything. That's a production test pilot. An experimental test pilot will take something that's never flown before in an airplane. We did this. We demonstrated this with a Super Hornet. I was the chief pilot for – it was called Advanced Super Hornet. And we put an enclosed weapons pod. So just imagine if you don't want to have all your weapons hanging out in the wings like a lot of fighters do, we're going to hide them inside a pod. We'll take that flying for the very first time, and we're going to be very gentle for the first flight. And then we're going to look at data streams, make sure it's good to go, and then we'll incrementally creep up to the limits of whatever that thing is we're testing. So that's an experimental test pilot. So there's two different flavors.
Yeah. That's some kind of work. That, too, is for other people, not for me. Christian, what sort of an involvement does Boeing have in this exhibition? I mean, obviously, it's a driving force behind it. But in terms of its involvement in the exhibition itself, do we track Boeing's contributions to aviation through this?
We do. I mean, Boeing's contributions to aviation, the innovation, the types of aircraft, and even some of the experimental designs that are worked on from Boeing engineers is featured in the exhibit. But beyond the exhibit, what people may not know behind the scenes is the relationship that Science Center has with Boeing. And that relationship is really about helping to foster a richer, a more extensive pipeline of STEM professionals. Mm-hmm. And when I say STEM professionals, I'm using that a little bit loosely because certainly you think about engineers and scientists and researchers that work to design the next generation aircraft or that work in the Phantom Works, you know, trying to tackle wicked problems, as they call them. But there are also all the people that John mentioned that help support you on the flight line, mm-hmm. behind the scenes, taking telemetry or other data, scientists, data scientists, engineers. And then right here in the studio, we have people that have marketing background. And so they're all working with us at the Science Center to find the best way to blend the resources of both organizations to really make a difference for that next generation. And this is important because Boeing has supported many of our field trip packages, which cover the exhibit and other things at the Science Center, like the planetarium and our Mars exhibit, and support transportation, bus transportation, to get a school to the exhibit or to the Science Center specifically to explore STEM.
What's the next generation of aircraft going to look like? Pretty much like the current generation, but what is going to be different will be inside, John, as opposed to outside?
No, I think you'll see, you know, there's a lot of concepts. You can Google search advanced tactical fighter and see a lot of, I call them Dorito-shaped airplanes, where they're trying to focus on stealth and yeah. a lot of triangular-shaped airplanes with different composites. They almost start looking like spaceships. So we'll probably see some more experimental designs. Then when you start going inside the cockpit, that's when you start seeing a lot of flat panel screens. In fact, some of them even come to life 3D, dual-touch, multicolor. Now we're going to start seeing things that aircrew will wear over their eyes. So we'll have virtual reality goggles. So maybe you have a window outside the cockpit, maybe not. But you're going to see a lot of advanced concepts being co-developed by Boeing and other partners.
And will we see that in this exhibit?
We have some of that in the exhibit now, and we're hoping to do more with online resources and carts that are based in some of our exhibits where we add new things. So as we build up a partnership with an organization or with researchers that are doing things with virtual reality or augmented reality, we usually bring those into the exhibit and use the exhibit as a platform for people to explore new and existing things.
Do you run focus groups before exhibits like this are put before the public to see how they react to them?
You know, we do with some, and certainly with some of the exhibits that we are in development now, we have extensive focus groups and other audience testing that we do. But in this case, it was a really easy sell, and I'll explain why. We tested our audiences at the Science Center to try to find out from the visitors that go there, what are their top interests, you know, the number one sort of topic of interest that they were interested in. And space and aviation was right there at the top. So we felt no testing was needed. Let's get this exhibit in and let's get people exploring aviation and space and above and beyond.
This is a traveling exhibit, so it's going to have a limited time here. What is the time frame?
That's correct. It opens on this Friday, January 29th, and it runs through Sunday, May 8th. So it's kind of a relatively short period of time. We certainly encourage people to come out to the exhibit early in the process so that you can come back and see it again, as people do for many of our exhibits when they can't get a chance to see everything. And hopefully they'll get a chance to see Living in the Age of Airplanes, which is our Omni film, which is a great compliment. We don't always have a nice Omni and exhibit compliment. For those of you that like space, that are interested in this, or you have a budding STEM professional or scientist or engineer in your or pilot in your family, come on down to the Science Center and check it out.
We're going to be talking with the producer-director of that film, and that'll be airing at a later date, but we will be having that conversation. Time's just about up. I'm just bringing this up almost for the fun of it, but I see today that I guess Boeing has lost out on a big sale to Iran, with the Airbus getting an order for 114 Airbuses. Yeah. Boeing would like to have a piece of that action, I'm sure. You're not going to comment on it.
No comment.
And I don't expect you to. I want to thank you so much for being with us, John Tugas and Christian Greer. Best of luck with the exhibit, and I'm sure you're going to have a great time with the kids. Have a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
From tomorrow through the 8th of May. Thank you, guys. Talk to you again, I hope. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, in our next Behind the Headlines segment, we'll take a look at the pending Department of Justice Ferguson consent decree addressing the civil rights violations by Ferguson's police department and municipal courts. And we'll check in with Missouri State Capitol reporter Marshall Griffin. We'll also talk about this year's Theater Circle Awards and the state of theater in the region in general. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.